Welcome back to the show, Richard Hebert, Hebert's Garden Center. And Richard, first of all, good morning to you.
Hey, Jeff, good morning to you.
Appreciate the opportunity as always. When we last left off, we were still in the midst of some pretty nasty weather, and it didn't really wrap up until it warmed up Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, what a difference a week makes. Normally a day, but what a week this is compared to that week last week.
Yeah, and, you know, I appreciated the idea, too. You said, you know, normally after a freeze like this, you might want to wait until you do some of that cleanup. But then you get weather like this, and
right.
We're getting so much, you know, very close to March now. It is time to
It is. I mean, even if we get cold, it looks like at this point it's not going to be, I mean, like you're saying, we're going to be in March in a few days. So that tells us, you know, our average last freeze date, 32, is around the middle of March average. So that tells us, you know, people say, oh, yeah, I remember Easter, we got a freeze. And that may be true, but it's a freeze that is in and out. In other words,
yeah.
It gets cold. You either get a frost or a freeze, and the next day it's 70 degrees. It's not going to be like what we had last week. So that danger is gone, but we're starting to see, since the last time we talked, Jeff, is the ramifications of last week. You know, as temperatures stayed cold, things didn't break down. But now we're starting to see more and more citrus, especially young citrus, Jeff. I mean, we're seeing trees that were, you know, either newly planted or, you know, 2 or 3 years old that are just burnt to a crisp. And obviously that's not a good sign. You know, like I talked about last week, you know, people are calling in and saying, man, all of my leaves dropped, not on citrus, but on other plants. And I'm telling them, I said, hey, that's not a bad thing. Considering you want that to happen as opposed to this browning, which doesn't mean anything is necessarily dead. It just means it's not healthy, right, Jeff? I mean, when you get something brown like that, it's obviously you got a problem. So at this point, you know, we can start to cut back. I was telling people to wait to this weekend and see what the long-range forecast is. But, Jeff, the long-range forecast is good, and it's warm. And like you're saying, believe it or not, I saw some ginger that were cut back and saw sprouts coming out of the ground.
Yeah.
And so it happens that fast, just that the soil temperature has to warm up. And part of the reason is you generally don't see the kind of cold we got in February. You know, you'd see that in December, January. And so the cold we got was extremely, extremely cold, but the temperatures immediately warmed up. And that's kind of unusual. And, you know, in truth, you would actually rather it be a slow going from cold to not so warm. You want to be much slower. But I think in this case, if it's going to come back, it's going to come back. And we're just getting so many calls on it, Jeff. And pretty much it's the same old story for just about everything. You don't want to fertilize it. At this point, you can cut back, but you don't want to fertilize anything. And the reason is you just don't, like I just said, in terms of the temperature warming up fast, it's really not ideal. And the same thing with fertilization. You don't want to push this bush or tree to put out new growth and get aggressive, because there's damage to it. And so it needs to be a kind of a slow growth. And all we can do now is watch it. There are a few things that I know are coming back. And we have a bunch of people with sago palms that were browned up to nothing. And sagos aren't a true palm, and they will not die in severe cold. And so even though, you know, the fronds are burnt to smithereens, you can just cut those off, and it's going to be later than sooner, but they're going to sprout back and come back. It may not be till the middle of summer before that happens. Some of the bigger palm trees, it's going to be a wait and see. You know, I mean, it was close. You know, we lost, you know, probably for the last 20 years, palms have become a big deal in our area. But the queen palms were the ones that would be planted the most. And it was strictly because they were a beautiful palm tree and they were less expensive. The hook is that they couldn't take any type of cold. So, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when we got that cold weather that it stayed below freezing for a couple of days, it killed just about every queen palm in the three parish area. And so those aren't.
I love seeing the trunks, though, still. There are right. a bunch of them in town that are 20 feet tall or 30 feet tall. I don't know. And nothing on top, but you still.
Jeff, they're not giving up hope. They keep looking at it. They're not giving up hope. But anyway, so the ones that kind of either survived or from then on, people didn't want to have anything to do with queen palms, no matter what the price. They kind of learned their lesson, and those are much more cold hardy. They got down. It got down to pretty much that point where it's going to be close. But I'm hopeful, and I think that a lot of them will do. But you don't want to fertilize them. As soon as you see these fronds start to burn back, and it's obvious that they're not going to be any green left on them, you can cut all that off. Some people will actually spray liquid copper. It's a fungicide to prevent any decay. You just want to make sure you probably need a hose end spray. You want to get it up the tree at the top, and you want to kind of spray that. So if there's any decay in there from the freeze, it will kind of, take care of that issue. You probably have to spray it two or three times over a two-month period. And so you'd want to do that and just kind of let Mother Nature do what it's going to do. And one thing we learned with the last one is that, you're not out of the woods with these tall palms. You can start to see them sprout middle of the summer, July, and it just never – it'll come out but never really pushes really hard. And all of a sudden the next summer you start to see the decay on the trunk itself. So it may take, a year or two before you see the full consequences of this freeze. But, again, the ones that were remaining were much cold hardy. So, I'm cautiously optimistic on that. And but one good thing that we did see, and we talk a lot about lawns because people are really into lawns. But a good thing about the lawn situation is, one, is the crabgrass. Crabgrass has, over the last 2 to 3 winters, overwintered. Crabgrass is really an annual, meaning that and so if we get a normal winter with a decent freeze, it'll kill all the mother plants, and so the only thing you got to worry about is the seeds. So and the reason crabgrass is such a tough one to deal with is that there's nothing really that treats mature crabgrass in St. Augustine. There's nothing that will kill that and not kill the St. Augustine. And so it's very difficult to control it if those mother plants are overwintering. So this year especially is a important year that now you'd want to put down a pre-emergent, whether it be a granule or liquid. You'd either spray it or broadcast these pre-emergent granules, not weed and feeds. We've talked about that. But these are straight. One's called Dimension, and you just broadcast it out. And it will prevent all the crabgrass seeds and seedlings from sprouting. If you can stop that, you're going to have very little or none all summer long. And whereas last year, you'd have prevented the new ones from coming up, but those old mother plants were still there. And so we were starting to see a lot more crabgrass. It becoming a bigger issue. So, you want to get that done. You can't wait too long because it's warming up so fast. And it's later than it would seem. We just came off a hard freeze. You would think, well, we're in the middle of winter. We're not. We're almost into spring. And so you'd want to put these granules down to prevent not only crabgrass seeds but a lot of other weed seeds from germinating. The poana, which is the one many listeners know as the one with the green solid, it's a little clump. It has a solid green leaf. It comes out of these little white flowers, and they stand out readily because the grass is dormant, and you got these little green, beautiful, lush little tufts all over. Doesn't look great because it's not uniform, and you put that down. It'll prevent the flowers from when they drop their seeds from those sprouting next year, and. And so that'll help you next winter. The good thing about the poana is that when temperatures start in about the middle of the year, it get hot, it dies.
Oh, okay.
So really, if you can kill those seeds, it'll help.
A lot of weeds will die when it gets really hot.
Absolutely. The clover, is a classic one. So you're trying to prevent it from coming back next year so you have less of an issue. And so this is a great year to do the pre-emergent for all the reasons I just stated. And hang in there on the fertilization. We get a couple weeks away, and we'll look at the temperatures, and you can put it down and try to get this grass to come back. And we talked last week about the sod webworms. I think it's going to be, in terms of the cold weather, it will have knocked those numbers down dramatically. And so we should have a lot less of an issue. The problem we have is the damage that the sod windworms caused last fall comes into this year because the grass isn't as thick. So we're going to have a lot more weed issues. Again, that's why the pre-emergence are very important, because the grass isn't as thick as it would normally be. You know, weeds need sunshine and space to sprout. If you got a nice, healthy lawn that's thick, you're going to have a lot less weeds. It's when that grass starts thinning out for whatever reason. This year it was because of the sod webworms, but it could be a lot of reasons, you know, poor drainage or whatever. That's when you start to see a lot more weed intrusion into the lawn. So doing the pre-emergence and fertilizing this year, we're going to tell people, normally, you know, if you fertilize in the spring, that's generally not enough. But if you had sod webworm damage, you're going to want to do it two or three times this year, try to get it thicker and let it catch up. I don't think we're going to have a major issue. You know, St. Augustine can be cold sensitive. That's why you don't see any St. Augustine as you start to go up north. You don't see much of it. Really, once you get out of the state, I don't even know if there's a lot in North Louisiana, because it's not a really cold tolerant grass. But I think we ought to be. I think we're going to be okay in terms of that. And that is strictly due to the rain and the sleet that we got that protected that ground.
Gotcha there. Brought in a box of stuff?
I did. Well, I got a box of one thing.
It's a very small box.
It's a small box and a small item. What I bought is, you know, we talked about seed potatoes. And Jeff, the seed potatoes this year, normally at this point, people would have planted a bunch of seed potatoes. And I'm going to throw that at you.
Because so far, I thought it was a piece of sausage, like a cut.
You
can
try
smoked sausage.
Try it, Jeff. It is smoked sausage. No, I'm showing Jeff a cut Irish potato. And so people are behind on the potatoes strictly because, man, last week it was just brutal in terms of temperature and in terms of moisture. So you couldn't do anything in the ground last week, nor would you have wanted to. But this one is one that was cut about 2 weeks ago. And basically the difference, the reason I'm showing this is that the potato itself, when you first cut a potato, the skin oozes, and so this basically means is that things are going out of the potato. That means things can go in, such as bacteria and insects. Once it heals over like that, it's not as easily penetrated. So if you have some land that you want to plant seed potatoes, not too late. You probably have another 2 weeks, 2 to 2.5 weeks to get them in the ground. But they do extremely well. It's one of my, you know, the funner crops. I actually do this in big tubs, and I do it because it's kind of fun with the grandkids to show them the potato, because they don't see it. You know, with a tomato plant, you actually see the fruit as it develops. Well, with a seed potato, because it's a root crop, you kind of got to wait till you start to dig them to see what you got. And I probably planted, I don't know, in a 25-gallon tub, I probably planted maybe a pound of potatoes, which is probably two potatoes cut up into 10 pieces. And out of that pound, I will get 20 to 25 pounds, which is really, it always amazes me how that works. You got to treat them right. You got to, you know, fertilize them, make sure they well-drain. And all I do is I put soil at the bottom, about 8, 10 inches of soil, plant the potato. And then as it grows, I keep covering some of the leaves, not all the leaves. I leave maybe, 12 inches of leaves out of the ground. But as soon as that potato gets 24 inches tall, I fill it with either hay or loose soil, and I keep filling it up as it grows. So what I'll end up having is a 25-gallon tub that has leaves going maybe 2 feet out of the ground, and between where I put the soil and the top of that tub, fills up with Irish potatoes. A few things other things you need to do with it, such as fertilize it as it grows. But fundamentally, potatoes make on the vine itself, and that's why people will actually take the soil once the potatoes get 2 or 3 feet tall and actually mound the soil up to it. We're talking about in the ground. They'll actually come by and they will mound the soil to it. And therefore, those potatoes will actually make above the ground in the soil that was pushed up to the top. But in the pots, you're actually going to put hay or loose soil and keep filling it up. And I mean, it's pretty amazing.
As they emerge, you cover it again.
As they emerge, but you still want to leave, let's say it's 2 feet tall, you'd want to leave a foot out. Because remember, the leaves are what makes the food
for the
growth. Gotcha. So you never want to just cover completely. But yes, as they keep sprouting, you add a few inches of either hay or loose soil, and you keep adding it, and it eventually will get out of the pot. The pot is probably about 18 inches tall, and it'll get 2 feet out of the pot. In between where you laid the true soil and the hay will be all full of potatoes. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I don't see how that potato famine ever occurred when you think about it.
All it takes is one bad apple.
One bad apple, and it ruins the whole thing. And that's,
pomme de terre. Bad pomme de terre.
And that's pretty much what happened. When it comes to, people are concerned about planting citrus. And, Jeff, one thing about, this freeze, there's going to be a high demand on certain plant material. And obviously the demand is going to be on the plant material that people either lost or just say, I'm not going to look at this till July. I'm going to replace it. It's a double hit this year for the whole nursery industry. Last year was a very good year for the nursery industry because people stayed home and they did a lot of stuff. So we had a shortage of plant material in the fall. And so, but with this freeze, it's going to make it worse because the demand is going to be very, very high. So when it comes to fruit trees, what we did last fall is we kind of predicted not the freeze, but we knew that plants were going to be short. So we ordered pretty much fruit trees, what we needed to sell for the spring for the last fall and the spring. And we held that over. The problem is going to be now is that people lost plants. And so there's going to be even higher demand. So this is one of the years I think you want to kind of get an earlier start. Don't wait too long into it. Although overall I think we're going to be okay, but there's going to be select items that the demand's going to be high, and since they were hard to get before, it's going to be one of those seasons. It's amazing, Jeff, how the increase in vegetable growing and fruit tree growing. I don't know, 30 to 50%, and this is not just Abears. This is across the board, nationwide, and. It's because people were saying, look, if I'm going to stay home and I want to – some people wanted to look good. Some people wanted something that they could eat. And so everything from peaches to pears to plums to figs. Figs have been huge. And, of course, the citrus. The citrus took a hit. And, they were calling – some people calling and said, man, I planted my citrus in November. And we would tell them, if you planted this year, dig it up. Dig it up because it ain't going to make it, So just dig it up. It'll be fine. And then replant it after this, some people did it, some people didn't. But young trees have trouble. But if you have the space, and we tell people when it comes to, for the most part, not 100%, but 95% of the plant material that's going to produce, such as pears, peaches, plums, figs, citrus, vegetables, you need sun. So you just don't want to put in a situation where it's real shady. You're going to be disappointed. Not that it's going to die. It's not going to die, but it's going to grow and either be non-productive altogether or grow and produce very, very little. So site selection is going to be very important, is to find the area that you have sun. And do it small, but do it right. Don't have big plans. Do it small, but do it right. And, you will have success if you do it that way. If you try to get too big too fast, you're going to have problems because it's a learning experience. And so if you just take your knocks on a small area, you're going to be successful and you're going to want to do more. So kind of keep all that in mind. And, when it comes to the plant material, the biggest one that people are worried about is going to be the citrus trees. You cut them back till you get to some green and you see what happens. And then if it keeps dying back, you keep cutting it back. I went out to a site yesterday and I did see what we talked about where all citrus trees are grafted. And I saw where, and I knew this one was dead. It was a young lemon tree. It's probably 3 years old. And I know the lemons took the lick the worst. But on that lemon, they had a big sprout that was obviously at least a couple years old and was into the tree. And so I told that homeowner, I said, now listen, what's going to happen here is that this tree is going to, in about another month, you're going to see this beautiful, about 50% of the tree is going to be green. And the rest of it's going to be dead. And then what you're going to do is you're going to cut it all, the dead stuff back. I said, man, I got this beautiful tree. I said, you don't. What you got is below the graft. Mm. And that is the stuff that's not going to, it's going to make a fruit that's worthless. It's going to be sour. And so people that have trees that are relatively old, go look at the graft and see if you have something coming from that graft. It's going to be pretty massive. It'll probably be an inch in diameter. And it's going to be well up into the tree if it's old enough. And it doesn't have to be that old, a year. And know that if that tree is totally brown and you've got that one sprout that's green, it's really not worth it. So you want to look for it and take it out. You can actually take that out now, but it'd be easier once it kind of clears out and things start to sprout. You're going to see that sprouting and the rest of around it. Now, the satsumas and all that, It's too hard to tell. Some people said had very little damage, and some people are browned up completely. And, man, that depends on age, location, wind direction, were they under a canopy, a tree, whatever. The little differences make a big difference when it comes to situations like this. And the further south you go, I mean, people in Franklin, they were 4 or 5 degrees higher than us as opposed to we got down to, 17. I think they were.
Yeah, I think that was right around the lowest
point. The lowest of the low, and their lowest was around 21, 22. That makes a big difference. Mm. And even though it's very cold, and you still lost some stuff, and it's kind of a wait and see. But boy, people are antsy, Jeff. They're ready to go in this kind of weather. I get it. We're ready to go too.
There you go. What else is hot these days?
Let's see, Jeff. We covered the fruit trees, we covered the lawns, we covered the cold damage, and really it's we're starting to get stuff in. People are planting the shrubbery, which is a non-issue. Things such as azaleas and all that, Jeff, we covered it. We're getting new stuff in, so we really didn't have a non-issue in the landscape. If you get some burn back, like for example, you got burn back with hawthorn. And it's all that new growth that got burned back. It's fine. You just go in there and shave that off and then fertilize it. Stuff with very slight damage, you can fertilize. Or if you want to wait another month, you can do that. The azaleas, the same thing. At worst, you got a little bit of burn back. The biggest one that besides the citrus that people are worried about is the hibiscus. And that's a close call. Because those are really tropical. The bougainvillea is, unless it was some kind of protection, didn't make it. Mandevillas, alamandas, all those jatrophas, all those tropical type stuff did not make it. Hibiscus, they're going to struggle big time. And so all you can do is cut it back and kind of wish it luck. But it got cold, Jeff,
No doubt. I look at these crepe myrtles right in front of us or across the street, and I've noticed in the past how they tend to bloom at different times, I guess different varieties. The one that's kind of to my left behind you, it was already starting to green up, and it was all covered with ice. Are those kind of trees affected by this?
Yeah, they're not going to have a problem at all. If anything, and I don't even think that's going to be. They may bloom a few weeks later, but I really don't think that's going to be an issue. So. No, all your Bradford pears, crepe myrtles, maples, all that stuff, live oaks, obviously, magnolias, not a non-issue. In many ways, the cold weather will help them. Certainly on some of the fruit trees, like the pears and the peaches and all that, they need certain number of days of cold temperatures. And let me tell you, they didn't have it. They got it now, though, and because of the consecutive hours, it's the number of hours that they need below 42 or below 45. And so that's going to help all of that. And man, Mother Nature is something. There's a reason for all of this, and there's going to be good and bad to occur, and that's some of the good. So, you know, the good way to tell is if it's been around, if it's something that's been around for certainly a generation, you know it's been through stuff. And so crepe myrtles have been around a long time. Live oaks, magnolias, maples, azaleas, all that stuff has been through it. And so they can tolerate it. And although they're not necessarily native plants, but they are adaptable to our environment, even when it gets colder. And so, when it comes to landscape design, Jeff, you know, I always try to prevent people from going too much into tropicals. Not that you don't utilize tropicals, that's fine, but you need some base plants so that your landscape can look halfway decent in the wintertime. And so, but this winter is different. Not only does the landscape not look halfway decent in the wintertime, but it's not coming back. Mm-hmm. And so when you got so much invested in it, so now you're looking at a landscape that's not only look bad, but you got to invest a tremendous amount of dollars to get it back to snuff. So a combination is really the best way to do it. Limit the tropicals. They'll still look very, very, very pretty, but you just want to limit the number of tropicals, you know. So, one I'm thinking of is not a tropical, lantana. That's going to even be close. And lantana is a hardy perennial. It's a vine. Some of them they're called Hammond eggs, are more upright. But that one got zapped. Now, that one I don't think you should pull out. You should cut it back to about 12 inches from the ground and just leave it alone. And let's see what happens. If it starts to sprout, which I think in some cases they will not, in some cases they will. It just depends on location. But that's a hardy perennial where, you know, it gets down to 27, 28 degrees, and it frees down to the ground. People call and say, is my lantana dead? I'm telling them, no, it is not. This one is close, but it's worth waiting.
There you go. Got a caller on the line. We'll see if it's a question or comment for Richard Hebert. Hi, you're in the air. I guess it was not, but appreciate the call. Richard, anything else before
I think that's it, Jeff. And so we're filling the nursery up. And by next week, we'll actually start with we've already started with a few tomato plants and all of that. And we just tell people when it comes to vegetables this time of year, it is not too early to plant them unless you can't protect them. Because we are going to get some cold. It's just a matter of when and how cold. Will it be a frost? Will it be 32, a freeze? Or will it be just in the upper 30s and 40s? We're going to get something. And so you got to be willing to protect it. So if you plant 100 tomato plants, don't do it. It's too early. Yeah. However, you can plant 20 of them and get an early start, because that early start is going to be much extremely beneficial as time goes on and the temperatures get hot and you're losing your flowers are drying because the temperatures are too hot and just other issues come into play. So, you know, no one said you got to plant all at once. So plant a little bit now that you can protect and then slowly build up as you can go. We'll talk more and more about vegetables and flowers as time goes on.
Sounds good. Richard, always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to the next time.
Thank you, Jeff.
You bet.